think we need a podcasting table.
Yeah. Well, if we get a new house with a spare weird room, we can make a podcasting room.
Does it need to be weird? Well, does it have to be weird? What do you mean by weird?
Well, weird, when I say weird, I mean like it's too small to be a bedroom.
Right.
Like we saw, I looked at some houses yesterday in the map and they were just like, you know, they're like four bedrooms, but the fourth bedroom is like a hole in the ground. Mm. I'm like, oh, yeah, good one, guys.
Yeah, it's a dog kennel.
Yeah.
Because I just can't get comfortable. All these episodes we've done, you always look super comfortable because you're on your giant throne chair.
Yeah, you can be comfortable too.
And I'm like on the edge of this couch. But I want to, I can't, I need to be able to look at you while I'm talking to you. I can't.
Yeah, but you can look at me like on the side, like you can sit on the couch. Like you just love having your little fucking mic pole.
Yeah, because when I didn't have the mic pole, I was told off for making too much sound with the microphone.
Well, wear headphones and then you can gauge how much sound you're making with the microphone.
Oh, this is a lot of...
Well...
This is a lot of mucking around.
I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
Just be able to talk into a microphone.
Well, you're the one who wants to have your podcasting mic stand because I'm a real professional. Blah, blah, blah. Be a realist. Put it in your hand like me.
This is the first thing Kelly said to me on a date. Just put it in your hand like me. Mm-hmm. This is, should we just watch it real quick, the only podcast in the world that doesn't plan their cold opens. I am Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 112 years of improv school to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian Gelden. Mm. It is the woman that will rip your fucking arms off. You look sideways at her. Mm. It is Kelly Big Whoop. Want to fight about it? For sticker.
That's me, dickhead.
There she is.
That's me. That is me. Bum, 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 brr, bu, 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 bu. Whoop, woo.
Hey, before we get into what else we've been watching this week, I have like a movie-related question because we started doing this again the last couple of weeks. Mm. If you could have, I'll open it up to directors and actors, but if you could have an actor or director slot into a film that already exists to improve it, who would you pick and why?
Ugh. An actor and director.
I'll give you my example to give you some time to think about
what
it.
What kind of fuckery is happening in your brain this week? Go on.
No, it's not. So, like, this is probably a pretty basic bitch pitch, to be honest, because 1,000 other people have done it before. Quentin Tarantino was on Rogan last week, which was hard for me to see. But anyway, Rogan was like hounding him about the 10 movie thing. Do you know about the 10 movie thing?
No.
Quentin Tarantino is going to retire after he makes his next film, which is his 10th.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
And right. Then that's it.
Yeah.
No more Quentin Tarantino films. And essentially, he was saying, without saying it, I'm kind of like the Beatles of directors, and I want to go out on top.
Okay,
I want to make one more film and then close it down. I'll go do other stuff, whether it's producing or whatever. But I don't want to be that guy that has to be asked to leave the party, you know? Which means that the last Quentin Tarantino film will be a very Tarantino film. Mm-hmm. But there was some talk for a little bit there from him that he wanted to write and direct a Star Trek movie.
Oh, I would love that.
Right? So this is the kind of thing that I'm thinking about, like, who would make a good what, or which actor would be good in a role that hasn't been cast as yet? Like, you know, sort of like stunt casting for Bond, or who would be a great Superman, or that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So, like, what are other ones that I can think of?
Like Kevin Smith or something?
Yeah, like what would Kevin Smith be good at? Direct, like, he kind of, this is pretty much his whole podcast is him stunt casting himself as directing different like comic book stuff.
Mm.
But like the couple of horror films that he made in Red State and Tusk, like after all the viewer skew stuff, were really interesting, pretty fucked up. So I would like to see Kevin Smith have a crack at a horror franchise, like maybe a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although it's pretty hard to do better than that film. That film is the creepiest thing I've ever seen in my life. Or like a Jason film or a Freddy film. Like, let Kevin Smith have a crack at that. I think that would be really interesting to see. Mm. He can definitely do like bro-y, gross out humor. Like, that is obviously his wheelhouse.
Mm.
But Red State is fucking scary, and Tusk is very weird and creepy as well.
Mm.
I think he could do a good job of like, and you get that sort of brand recognition as well. Like, Kevin Smith's making a Halloween movie, or Kevin Smith's making a Leprechaun movie or a Child's Play movie or something like that.
I mean, that kind of stuff's good, because I feel like if someone like Kevin Smith, he does make good films. So I would love to see his take on that, because I think he's good.
He is good for the most part. The last couple of films he's made were fucking atrocious. But,
oh, okay.
Like Yoga Hoses. Yeah. He tried to do like another universe that like spun out of Tusk, because Tusk was quite critically acclaimed and did okay at the box office. So then he kind of got caught up in like the characters in that film and tried to like spin them out into their own universe the same way as he did with Clerks. But no one was interested. But also, like, the films were bad. Like, they weren't well thought out, and they were a bit boring.
But well, like, I guess maybe he's still living off the Clerks and Mallrats vibe, which I remember back in the day, bloody Mallrats, that was like the most quoted film in year 10 for me. It was the fucking best.
So do you have a film, or like, do you have a director or actor you would like to see move into something? So like, I'll give you another example to give you more time to think. Aaron Taylor Johnson, who's the bad guy in Fall Guy. He's also the kind of the bad guy / good guy in Bullet Train. Was the main dude in what's it called? I keep going to call it John Super Lennon? Bad. No, well, yeah, he played John Lennon in Nowhere Boy. Anyway, he's a really good English actor. I would love to see him do Bond.
Oh yeah, he'd be great.
He's in the running for Bond. I think it'll go to Hiddleston.
I thought they were. Oh, really?
I think Tom Hiddleston will get that.
Oh, really? Oh, I think that's a shame.
He's the quintessential, you know what I mean? Like, he...
Like, my mum liked him.
He's 6'2". You know, like, there's all these, he like, dances. Rules.
Mum loves him, yeah.
But there's all these rules you have to hit to be a Bond as well. It's like, you've got to be 6'2", English.
And his looks are very Bondish.
Yeah, and he's got that clipped
even though that
Oxbridge that sort of guy, thing about him.
Aaron Carter. What's his name?
Aaron Carter.
What's his name? Bloody whatever.
Aaron Carter played power forward for the Toronto even Raptors though the, in the 90s.
Yeah, even though the other guy you're talking about, that was in Bullet Train.
Vince Carter. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah, he is really good, and I think he's handsome, but I feel like with Bond, they like the classical jawline handsome, which is annoying.
Taylor Johnson's probably a little too working class for the
he played a good villain.
Family.
Yeah, but also I think he's capable of so much more than Bond. But I mean, if I were, I feel like there was a story about Daniel Craig where he turned down Bond and then they kind of pushed him again. And he's like, I just thought about it. And he's like, I just didn't want to be the guy with the washed up movie career sitting in a bar, drinking as an alcoholic, pointing at the screen going, you know, they asked me to play Bond once. And I said, no. And because he was a supporting character in a lot of films.
Mm.
Like Power One. We don't remember he was in that. He was a real horrible bad guy in that.
Yeah.
And that was fucking 25, 30 years prior. So I feel like, for someone like Daniel Craig, it's like, mate, just do Bond. Three films, you're set up for life, because you'll be getting a percentage of that, like the box office, like you work that into your, you know, it's like, hey, $10 million to play Bond for three films, but you're going to get 2% of all box office around the world. Mate, he's fucking, that's it. And then after you do those three films, you can do all of the really, really, you know, art house films on no budget and be paid pittance, because they're the stuff that you want to do. And that's what it's like. I call it paying the rent. You know, there's a lot of actors who do the pay the rent movies, because they're like, oh, fuck. Like, what was the film? Oh, I was watching
That's
King Kong.
That's in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, speaking of Kevin Smith, when Ben Affleck and Matt Damon show up.
Yeah.
Because they're in Good Will Hunting 2, hunting season. And and Ben Affleck's like fucking chewing Matt Damon out for doing too many art house films.
Yeah.
And Affleck's like, what have I told you before? You do one for them, then you do one for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, yeah, King Kong, there's all these people, like, it's, I don't know how they would have filmed it. It would have all been in front of a green screen. It's all, like, CI bullshit. But there's a bunch of people in it where I'm like, huh, you know? Oh, they're doing this movie? That this, like, crazy King Kong movie, King Kong versus Godzilla, but Godzilla's a fucking big robot and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
It's paying the rent, man.
Helen Mirren was in the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah, why not?
So is Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
You know, pay the like rent.
You don't have to work for 5 years.
Yeah, they make Vin Diesel look real bad when he's sharing the screen.
Yeah, isn't that interesting when you see someone just acting the pants? I find that whenever I watch Law and Order and they have someone famous, like I really love it when they have famous people coming in to do guest starring roles, like Robin Williams. Was in an episode and Martin Short.
Tarantino was in one, right?
Yeah, probably. Probably. I haven't seen that one yet.
I'm pretty sure he is.
But,
or he might have directed an episode. Oh, no, he directed an episode of ER.
Oh, right,
okay. Is what I'm thinking of because he loved ER.
Yeah. Well, in ER used to do it where they'd have people pop in. But, Martin Short was in Law and Order. Like, just in these, like, one episode things and you can see, the thing is they're pretty good, but there's just something about these movie stars coming in and they fucking act the pants. I noticed it. I won't say what show it is, but there was a show that came out, Australian show that I watched, where there were certain actors when they came in and they just acted the pants off. And everyone else is doing a great job. They're doing a really good job, but you could just see the years, 40 years of theatre, you know, like just the intensity where you're like, fuck, I felt bad for XYZ.
Yeah.
Because they were trying real hard and you know that they would have been stressed out and like, I've got to do a good job in this scene. Even if their dialogue in the scene is just nothing, like, you know, just nothing dialogue that's just exposition. Like, so what do we do now? You know? But fuck, these big dogs come in and just go, like polish off their nails and just go.
Yeah, man. We were going to do it for the podcast and then we got a dodgy copy somehow on a streamer, which I don't even know how the fuck that happens. But I went back and started watching it because it's a very Damien middle-aged dad show, The Sympathizer, all about spies in the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
But Robert Downey Jr.'s in that. Mm. He's not the star. He's kind of, I suppose he's a co-star sort of. But he plays this like nice, like a smiling assassin from the CIA.
Mm.
Like he's kind of this nice guy facilitator in Vietnam, or he presents himself as a nice guy, but he's an absolute fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
Like when he thinks he has to be that for America, you know?
Mm.
But it's a young Vietnamese cast. Everybody in this show is Vietnamese except Robert Downey Jr. And they're young because the characters in the show are young. It's the Vietnam War and they're soldiers and spies and stuff. And they're all very good. Everyone is very, very good.
Very good.
When our DJ walks onto the screen.
Yeah, it's hard.
He fucking posterizes these
kids.
He's
100 meters in front of you.
Yeah. He is fucking dunking on these kids. He's Harlem Globetrotting it, man. Like, he's fucking faking with them and stuff. And they're, like, keeping their head above water. They're not doing a terrible job, but he's always been absolutely magnetic. Even when he was a kid doing fucking, like, Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield and shit like that. Like, he has always had that. As soon as he's on the screen, your eyes go to him.
I feel like Ryan Gosling has that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has
that. Now that Downey Jr., well, the reason why I bring it up, talking about like, you know, get your money and then do what you want, this is what he's doing. You know, finished the Avengers 3 years ago or whatever, earned $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And in that time, he has done a documentary about his dad, who is also a wild man actor director that I haven't watched yet, but is supposedly good.
You should watch
this Sympathizer TV show about Vietnamese spies in the Vietnam War. And he was in Oppenheimer as well.
What was the movie that his dad made that was like kind of like people like Louis C.K. Were like it inspired them to go into comedy? The Senior?
I don't know.
All right, you keep talking. I'm just going to look this up. It's going to break my brain.
But it is interesting because it used to sort of be that you would do one for one, but it seems now that people are getting a lump sum up front by doing these huge franchises and then going off and doing whatever the fuck they want.
Putney Swope.
I've never heard of it before.
Putney Swope comedy drama, 1969. It was one of, like, at the time, it was really offbeat, kind of. It wasn't a typical kind of movie.
Mm.
I feel like I really want to watch that at one point just because I want to see what everyone sort of talks about, just because he kind of created a new style of directing.
Yeah.
That was just not, you know, like 69, you know what I mean? All the movies before that, it's like we have a plot, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of like just the way it was shot and the editing, you know, it was different from everyone. Even like Stanley Kubrick, who was, you know, good at building suspense and blah, blah, blah. This one was different because it was funny.
He was not bad at building suspense.
Yeah, well, this one was, yeah, but also it was just a different satirical, and he wrote it, yeah.
Oh, I'll definitely watch it.
He wrote it and directed it.
I'll definitely watch it, even on the back of CK's recommendation.
But it's one of those films where, like, it's got 69% in Rotten Tomatoes and it's 5.7 out of 10. Like, it's one of those things that's, like, critically was, like, not a big deal, but it was a film that was a big whoop.
Especially with comedy, I don't pay any attention to reviews at all. It's so subjective, and most of the time film critics don't have great senses of humor. They've got no fucking feel or vibe for what's funny or what's going to last or, you know. Is there anything that you've been been watching?
Oh, did I talk about Celine Dion last week? I think I did. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Law and Order?
Yeah.
No, not really, because my nights, I don't know, like, yeah, I don't know, because we kind of, what we're going to talk about today for our wrap party is what we've been watching at night.
We binged a whole bunch of stuff. I've watched the first couple of episodes of The Sympathizer, the RDJ show, really good. If you're looking for like a HBO, you know, sort of golden age of television serial drama, this might be for you.
This might be for you.
I would warn you that 85% of the dialogue is in Vietnamese. So if you don't like subtitles, first and foremost, I would say get over it. But secondly, you're going to be reading the film. So
yeah.
I feel like there was other stuff that I was watching as well.
Maybe. But we just really watched, we binge watched most nights. We watched the whole season, last season of Curb.
Yeah, I didn't watch anything else.
No.
It's a rap party. Rap party. Well, my name is Kelly and I'm here to say, gonna wrap it up in the coolest way.
Man, Larry David, this is my thing about Curb. Is that when I first watched Curb, I was like, I can't stand this show because it's just George being a fucking asshole. And some of the George-centric storylines in Seinfeld didn't really kind of, you know, I was just, because he's such an insensitive, selfish little twat. But then one time I was on a plane and they had like three seasons and I watched like three episodes in a row. And there's something about when you watch Curb, episode after episode, you start to really understand who he is, why he makes those decisions. And I was laughing out loud. I was lolling on a plane and I binge watched like three seasons because it just, it hit like the switch just, it hit the switch where I just went, oh, I get it. And I think it is brilliant. It's so good. And now, and even you were always like, and then when we were binge watching it, by the second or third episode, you were laughing more because I feel like it. That's what it does. Like it gets you. You start to, because if you watch him sporadically, I feel like he annoys you a bit more. But when you start to really, because I agree, all the things that happen with Larry, where it's like, oh, he's a dickhead. I agree with him.
Yeah.
Other people that are fucked. He's the normal one.
Yeah.
Trying to get normality in this world, and everyone else is acting like a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But with George, George was an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's the way that it's presented, right? And I suppose with Jerry being there and being a little more straight edge than Larry, maybe George was presented as a bit more of a psycho. But they would have amped it up for comedic effect as well, you know? Hmm. And like I wasn't we watched the first two or three episodes of the season, then kind of put it back on the shelf, and then came back to it this week and watched all of it.
Mm.
And it wasn't Larry that was doing my head. It's never been Larry that has annoyed me about the show. There's two things that frustrate me about the show at times, and I have to be in the mood for it. It's the fast nature of it.
Mm.
Like it's very sort of like French in that sense of like you have to suspend disbelief of like, well, why wouldn't you just say?
Mm.
I mean, Seinfeld's a bit like that as well. Like the fucking answering machine episode.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Where it's like George doesn't even really say anything that dumb on the you know what I mean? Like it would be embarrassing, but you just say, if you're dating this girl, you like each other, like, hey, listen, I left this voicemail, I don't mean it.
Yeah.
Like, dude, like that's how an adult would deal with this situation.
He's not an adult, like he's such a fucking cad.
But Curb is even more like that's been amped up to the max, you know? Like even in all the stories in this one, there are certain, like the house cleaner storyline in this season where like she catches Larry, or doesn't catch him because it's his house, but like walks in on Larry giving his girlfriend head, and then she's all like, oh, I can't, like, oh, it's so traumatic.
Mm.
You would just fire her. Like this goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks where Larry's like,
but that's the thing, he's like, oh, it's gonna look like I'm a bad guy. I'm not a bad guy.
Who cares? You're a trillionaire. Yeah, just do what you want.
But he was high. He was high on the accolades of, you know, his court case where he was branded as a hero among men because he gave water to a woman waiting in line to vote. You know, and he kind of wants to still, you know, he wants to still, yeah.
You have to push your belief system because it's like, oh, well, she'll go to the press and make things bad for us and me too. It's like, well, why would that be me tooing? Like, what? How would he get me tooed for that? Like,
well, she did see. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty horrific what she walked in on. She walked in on.
It's his house.
Yeah, well, she's the, you know, I don't know.
And she wasn't even meant to be there that day.
Yeah, well, he didn't know that because he's an idiot.
No, Larry's not in the wrong here. You're allowed to go down on your girlfriend in your bedroom, in your house.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Like, fucking hell. But yeah, it sort of becomes that thing of like, I find myself, and maybe because I have too much of a stick up my ass, and I should just let go and enjoy it. But there are times where I'll say to Kelly, like, that wouldn't happen.
Mm.
No one would talk like that in real life. So there are times where it kind of just takes me out a little bit.
Mm.
But I love Larry. I love Larry.
Yeah.
What I love about Curb, and I felt like the back end of this season really was a return to form. I thought season 11 was probably the weakest season of them all.
Mm.
And I thought this season was started off a little bit slow, but really picked up by the end. When JB Smooth, Vince Vaughn, Jeff, I always forget Jeff's surname.
Green. Green in the show, but Garland.
Yeah. When those three when those four are just talking to each other.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great. Any interactions between Jeff, Susie and Larry is fucking great.
Right.
There are like Richard Lewis and Larry. Oh my God, I could fucking listen to those guys talk shit all day.
Richard's such an idiot. Rest in peace.
Even like he's obviously very ill on this last season and he's still sharp as fuck.
Yeah.
So funny. So like I love that. And there is also like a travelogue kind of thing with Curb as well. It sort of feels like you're hanging around in Hollywood. in LA. Mm. There's a lot of driving.
Yeah.
A lot of like cafes and restaurants and stuff. Like, it does sort of feel like you hang out in LA a little bit. In a very sort of privileged way, like you don't see traffic jams much, or, you know, everything's very easy for Larry, you know. So I really enjoyed that. And it genuinely, the last four or five episodes is very funny. There's this like trial going on throughout the whole season. At the beginning of the season, Larry had gone to Atlanta, Georgia to be a guest at this party. Like basically a corporate gig. And then on that trip, he handed JB Smooth's aunt, who was in line to vote, a bottle of water and got arrested for it. And so he's become this like national hero because, you know, he basically didn't take a plea deal or anything like that and was like, no, I'm gonna fight this case, right?
Because this is a dumb law.
Yeah, because it's a dumb law. So Larry's fighting it because it's a dumb law, not necessarily because of like the racial implications of it.
But because he's like liking the fact, because when he gets back to LA, everyone's like, Larry, like all these black guys and like people are just like, Larry, thank you. Like everyone has all this respect for him now for being this like, you like you crossed the picket line to help us or whatever.
And he's loving it and like squeezing every little bit of juice out of it. But also he did do it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like he's lying or anything like that. He's kind of just loving the adulation a little bit too much. So that's building up throughout the whole season where he's going to have to go back to Atlanta for a court date. And then there's like a whole bunch of other little things going on like – the fish, they go, like there's this Chinese restaurant that they love going to and there's like a fish tank where a fish gets caught in the filter.
Yeah.
And Larry keeps bumping into, like, at first he was like saying to the guy who runs the restaurant, that fish is stuck in a filter, you need to help it. And the guy who ran the restaurant was like, no, he's just sleeping. He's just sleeping. He just likes the filter. And so they went back the next day because Larry's Larry and the fish was gone. And so Larry keeps like showing up. Like keeps seeing this guy throughout the scene. Did you notice that? Like every second episode he'd bump into
That's what I like about Curb.
The Chinese restaurant owner who was like, he's in the other store in the city. Very happy fish.
Yeah, but it's like they do that with so many of the recurring characters, which I love. Like Mocha Joe kept on coming, but it's like he's not in it all the time. He'll come back, like, you know, episode 7, then 12, like that kind of stuff. And Ted Danson is so great in it.
Yeah.
Like he's such a and you can see that Ted gets it. Like he's I think Ted Danson is so underrated as an actor. Like everyone kind of goes, oh, yeah, Ted Danson, but you look at him in Cheers and then you look at him like The Good Place.
The Good Place is amazing and he's fantastic in
that. And then in this, like this is a hard role to play where you're just like you're a straight man, like, but you have to be really sincere with the dialogue and everything, which I think is quite hard to be this sincere with the kind of stuff that he's tackled with about being like, oh, you know, I just got to – if I get arrested, I get arrested. Like, and it's believable. Ted Danson, A+. Yeah,
he's playing an idiotic version of himself, right? Like of this sort of Hollywood actor who is always on the newest cause and doesn't really understand how much of an idiot he looks like at times. But I can imagine there would be a lot of people who watch the show and see Ted and go, yeah, no, Ted's right.
Yeah.
Whereas
No. But my favorite character is Susie.
Yeah.
She's just the, like, I've never seen a relationship in any TV show where it just, because it always starts nice with them, where she's like, hey, Lair, how you doing?
Yeah.
You want something to eat? And then within 2 minutes, she's like, you're a fucking asshole. Get the fuck out of my house.
By the end of every scene with those two,
always.
They're screaming at each other.
Always. Yeah. And Jeff just lets it happen. Like, it's not even a point of, like, you're going to defend your wife? He's like, no, I can't. He's like, both of you are crazy. But it always starts off so fucking pleasant and then ends so bad. And just my favorite scene, this is probably where the switch turned for me where I was like, this show is fucking good, is that, you know, she's yelling at him. There's a part in season 6 and 7, Vivica A. Fox was in it and – you know, sexy black woman was dating Larry and Susie came to the house to yell at Larry for something. you know, Larry, you fucking piece of shit. I'm sick of your shit. And she's standing at the doorway. And you just see her, like, from, like, say, her point of view, like, yelling at Larry. And he's like, what, what? And then all of a sudden, someone pushes Larry out of the way, and it's this chick. And she's like, who the fuck are you to talk to my man like that? And Susie's like, hey, I was just, no, 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 you better back off. You gotta get the fuck out of my house, you dumb bitch, and slams the door in her face. And it's the first time you ever see Susie, like, like, no one's ever spoken to Susie the way, no one's ever spoken to Susie the way Susie speaks to Larry, ever. And someone finally did, and she was absolutely, like, terrified. Mm. And it was brilliant. It was just, and that was, like, one of the funniest things in that show that's ever happened. Man, I love this show. It's so good.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind the ending. The ending for Curb, all spoilers, no facts. The ending was, I thought it was really good, and I felt really warm and fuzzy because I have such a huge love for Seinfeld, like the TV show, because that show formed my sense of humor. And that show was on when I was in high school, and I was obsessed with it. Like, I can recite, like, every episode I know, every like, guest star. I don't know anyone that can battle with, you know, Seinfeld knowledge like I can. If I went on fucking a hard quiz, I would do Seinfeld 100%, and I would nail it.
Yeah.
But just actual Jerry Seinfeld, though, the last few years, like, just the way he appears in the media and his attitude, and we've talked about it before.
You can go back and listen to the Everybody's in LA episode where we talk at length about Jerry's appearance on that show.
Yeah, and I just don't want my love for Seinfeld to be ruined by the fact that I'm just not a big fan of Jerry today, and that's fine. But he's in the last episode, and it's great. And I actually have this nostalgic feeling watching Jerry in a sitcom, where I feel like I'm watching Seinfeld again. And it's actually kind of, that nostalgia kind of makes me feel, like, safe.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good ending.
So, basically the last episode. So, if you've watched Seinfeld, the last episode of Seinfeld, double episode, I can't even remember what they get arrested for.
Because I watched a man get carjacked, and they videotaped it, and they just stood by and watched it happen and then mocked him. And then basically they got arrested for not helping, and they were like, well, it's not our job to help. But apparently they made up this thing where it's like, you know, since the Princess Diana death, where people kind of stood around taking photos, they brought in this law called the Good Samaritan Law. Mate, I know Seinfeld. The Good Samaritan Law, where you can be charged for not stepping in and intervening when someone's in need.
Right. Anyway, so they go to trial. And the trial is essentially everyone they've wronged over the 10 years of Seinfeld comes in and talks about how horrible they are.
Yeah.
Jerry's ex-girlfriends, the guy who opens the Pakistani restaurant across from Jerry. Very bad man.
Bubble.
All those guys, Newman, of course, everybody comes through and is like, they're the worst. Mm. And it ends with all four of them in a jail cell having the same conversation that the Seinfeld started with, which I can't remember what the conversation
was. Which was about the button on a shirt.
Right.
The button's too high. See, if I do undo it, it's too much chest showing. If I put up higher, it's choking me. That's God. What people making shirts like that?
Yeah.
And
then it just like is a long sort of pan out from the jail cell. And that's it. That's the end of Seinfeld. At first, I didn't hate that ending, but then over time, I've kind of been like, I didn't really like it.
It was globally canned as a really bad ending. It was globally canned as a terrible ending, and it ruined. It's like the whole 9 seasons of Seinfeld is ruined because of that ending.
I don't know if it's ruined. I actually think, I get that everybody else said that. I'm just talking about my opinion. I think from a storytelling point of view, when you really think about how awful all four of them are as people, it kind of makes sense that they end up in jail, right?
It does, yeah.
So I don't think it's that bad. But obviously, yes, Kelly is right. There's been for 20 years, it's the worst.
Mm.
So Larry, when you're watching this, it's like, oh, Larry's doing it again. And me and Kelly both had the attitude or thought of like, he's going to fucking do it again.
Yeah.
He's going to double down and write the same episode.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and just be like, fuck you. Yeah. It was good the first time. It's good the second time.
But also, I like it that it was a fuck you to everyone who hated the end of Seinfeld. Well, you know what? You're going to get it again on purpose.
Yeah.
On purpose. Fuck you. And I fucking so love it.
Jerry shows up halfway through this episode. And I really agree with Stooks that, like, it's lovely to see those guys together. And I actually thought that, like, this felt more like a Seinfeld reunion than the Seinfeld reunion season. Mm. Because it, at its core, Seinfeld is Jerry and Larry.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see, like, they obviously love each other very, very much. And you can see that even on camera.
Mm.
Like when Jerry shows up in the hotel lobby.
Hey!
The way they talk to each other, and then Larry talks about what he's thinking about in the courtroom, which is just so fucking hilarious, about a really attractive bearded woman. And like, would you date her? You know, because she's leaving the circus, so she's going to shave. And then Jerry's like, but is the 5 o'clock shadow show up? Like, is it, what happens if I get home at 5:15? Is the beard reappearing?
Right.
So there's all this like really funny Seinfeld stuff. But the ending, so Larry gets found guilty. He gets put in a cell. He's chatting away to one of the other guys in another cell about, and I think it was the first thing he spoke about in Curb, where he's talking about the pant tent.
The pant tent, where it looks like your dick's poking out, but it's really when you're sitting down.
It's just the crease. It's just the crease in the pants.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, Seinfeld appears.
So you think it's ending the same way?
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, this is it.
And yeah, then, it looks exactly the same as the ending for Seinfeld. And then just out of nowhere, Seinfeld appears in the gate of the cell, and the cell door opens, and he's like, what does he call him? All right, Bubbles. Is that what he calls him? It's something like a cute little name like that. Like, all right, Bubbles, get out of here. And Larry's like, what? And then basically the story was that he went, because earlier in the episode you saw Jerry at a restaurant and he saw a guy who looked exactly like Joe Pesci. And then Jerry tries to do the lines from Goodfellas with him and he's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
And then when Jerry was in the court, he saw that guy as being part of the jury, which meant that he had left the hotel because the jury had been, what's the word they use in the States for that? Expedited or whatever.
I can't remember.
They're forced to stay in a hotel.
And they can't leave.
And they can't interact with anybody else because the case is a
sequestered.
Sequestered. Because it's a high-profile case. So then Larry went and spoke to the judge. Jerry went and spoke to the judge and said, I saw this guy in a restaurant the other day. They went and got the security footage from the restaurant. And he was there the whole... It's a mistrial.
Mistrial.
And then so it ends with Larry and Jerry walking down the hallway of the jail, walking out, and Jerry says, this is how we should have ended Seinfeld.
Oh, well.
And they both throw their arms up in the air, and that's the end of
Yeah.
Oh, no, there's a little Kyan at the end where it shows the main cast in business class on Delta flying back to LA, just screaming at each other.
They're screaming at Susie. It's
like Ted, Cheryl, Jeff, Susie, JP Smooth, and Larry all just...
Because Susie opens up the blind and her...
To read a magazine and then...
And it's too bright and everyone just starts yelling at her.
Ted cracks it and then Larry cracks it.
She's like, I can't read. It's dark in here. I'm blinded. I'm fucking blinded by you. Put the fucking shade down. Like, it's just... Yeah, and it's just them arguing and it's great.
What I love about that little Chiron at the end, right, is that they no one has learned a fucking thing.
No.
There's been no character development. No one's changed.
And he says that earlier, like there's a little kid that accidentally hit him with his ball and he's like, oh, it's all right. And the mum goes, no, we're learning about this now. No, please. What do you say? And the kid's like all silent and he's like, I don't care about this. I got to go.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, I need you to stand there while he apologizes. And it's that thing, I used to feel it when I used to be in a restaurant and parents would ask their kid to order because the kids really wanted to order. And it's like busy, I'm in the weeds. And they're like, so, Caleb, what do you want? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Come on, say it. You want a? And I'm just like, fucking hell, just order for the kid. It's too slow. And that was what was happening. And then she's like, no. And the mum was like, no, he really needs to learn. You know, he needs to learn the repercussions of his actions. And he's like, I'll tell you one for free, kid. I've never learnt anything from any of my, what did he say? Like,
I've never learnt a lesson
in my life. Yeah. So don't worry about it. She's like, thanks for your help. But I just, I feel like, and I really liked, because we hate Cheryl so much.
Oh, I hate and there's Cheryl. A part I hated where, Cheryl before I found out she was RFK's Cheryl. Wife.
We hate her.
I fucking hated the character. I hate.
But they really showed her to be the fucking annoying twat that she is. She's just an
annoying twat, man.
Because there's a part in the episode where they go, where should we go for dinner? And someone goes, Mexican. He goes, oh, no, Cheryl doesn't like Mexican. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go here. Okay, cool. And then she bails Larry up and goes, why did you tell him I don't like Mexican? That is private. That is mine. I don't want people to think that I don't like Mexican. Like, I think maybe she was thinking like,
people think that she's racist.
That she's racist. Yeah. And she's like, no, that's private. That's private. And he goes, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And they had this argument about it. And then when they're in the jail cell and Jerry's letting him out, I can't remember how they come up with something about...
Because it was a Mexican restaurant. And then Larry's like, what did you eat? And he's like, I didn't eat anything. I don't like Mexican.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And then he was like, oh, you don't mind? You don't mind if I tell people? And he goes...
I don't care.
Jerry goes, I don't care. Who I don't care. Who cares? Who would be bothered by that? Telling someone, oh, yeah, they don't like this food.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, it was such a homage. Like that was there purposely to show us, the audience, that yes, Cheryl is a cunt and a twat.
But also that like the people who, I think also it shows that like the people who have watched both Seinfeld and Curb and been like, I think those people are like, especially Curb, it's like, I think Larry's just insufferable.
No,
like,
they're insufferable.
You are the fucking psycho.
Yeah, you're the Cheryl.
Yeah, you're Cheryl. If you find
Jerry insufferable, Larry, you're Cheryl.
You're Cheryl and Ted.
Yeah, you're Cheryl and Ted and you're insufferable.
Yeah.
Or you could be like me and, you know, sometimes like Larry and sometimes hate him and I'm Susie.
No, I like Larry every time.
I'm Susie because sometimes I'm like, Larry, just fucking do it. And then sometimes like, hey, Larry, how you doing?
No, I think he's pretty much always right. Oh, the other thing that we didn't talk about is that he meets Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yeah.
So the boss loves Larry all of a sudden because Larry is this like...
advocate
civil for... Civil rights advocate, you know, and so Bruce like wants to meet him and they meet at Jeff's house. And then there's this like back and forth about whose glass of water is who. And then anyway, long story short, Larry gets COVID, which means that he has given Bruce Springsteen COVID.
And he has to cancel. But then
Larry keeps saying, well, he could have given me COVID.
Yeah.
How does anyone know that I gave him COVID? Yeah. Which is absolutely true
because
as well.
Because Bruce came out in the media first and said, Larry gave it to me, you know. So he's like, but how does he know?
Yeah.
Well, too bad because Bruce already said it to the public.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. Yeah.
So then Larry becomes the most hated man in America because again, Bruce Springsteen is doing his farewell tour has to cancel the tour
because
he's got fucking COVID, like really bad COVID, and he might not be able to sing ever again. So everybody on planet Earth fucking hates Larry David because he's essentially killed Bruce Springsteen.
And the whole thing. And when I love it when Larry had COVID because JP couldn't come into the house. He's like, he's like, do you know what this is doing to me? I can't use the good bathroom. And just like the whole thing about Larry, like every day he's testing to see. And then like day 7, he's like clear. And he's like, yes.
I'm out of here.
It's just, it was very of time.
Throughout the next couple of episodes, like, or you just keep seeing JB like coming into the house to get like with gas masks on and stuff to get toilet paper.
Gas mask to get toilet paper. How many grumps did you give it?
This season? Are we rating the season or the whole show? The season, right?
Yeah.
Look, I'll give it a 4. I really enjoyed it. I'll give it 4 grumps. Yeah, it was like a real return to form.
4.5 I'll give it. And it only lost half a point because Cheryl's the worst.
Yeah, I mean...
4.5 grumps.
Yeah, I don't know why I haven't given it 5. I mean, I really, really enjoyed
Cheryl's
it.
Cheryl's why I didn't give it 5.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it 4.5 too. I'll give it 4.5
Cheryl
grumps too.
Cheryl's sucks.
A fucking pain in the ass.
I fucking hate it.
Also, not very good.
Yeah, not very good.
Not great.
Not
it's
great.
It's always been fucking weak. And I mean, Larry obviously is a very loyal guy because he's kept her around, like basically wrote her out of the show and then wrote her back in. So anyway, we'll never have to see
her.
He's
just like most of the pain in his life is because of Cheryl.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like all the stuff that would happen when they were married, Let's go. Cheryl's like, I need you to drive down here and get
well,
this.
Well, we started watching again from season one, and I said that I was like, I can't watch this with her and Larry together.
Yeah, she's just the worst.
We're going to have to fast forward to season four or five or whatever it is until they break up.
Because she fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, 4.5 grumps. That's good. All right. I reckon it's time to end it because I have to go to the bathroom, which is always the time to end it. What?
What time is it?
What time is it on the thing?
It doesn't say. Anyway.
It doesn't say. It says how long we've been recording.
No, I'm not asking about how long we're recording. I'm asking for the actual 10:27. Human time.
10:27.
Okay, well, yeah, I have to go. So,
okay, good.
Thank you. A lot of people listening on the back of the Bratz episode.
Yeah, people like the Brat Pack one.
People fucking love 80s shit, man. Yeah. We've got to do more 80s stuff. Although we did an episode of Jaws for you guys. No one fucking listened to it. So I don't know. You're sending us mixed messages here, man. Mm. We do Jaws. No one listens. We do Bratz. Everyone listens.
Tell your friends. Give us five.
Anyway, we love you guys. Give us 5 stars. Rate and review. We actually did some posting on social media this week. So we'll try and do more of that. Follow us on socials on Instagram. Should we just watch it real quick? And that's it. Love you.
Love you.